everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, also known as your beloved H.
And I am Ryan Quintel. You can call me your cursed Q.
I like that. Cursed spelled with a Q, though. Cursed.
Yeah, the cursed Q.
The cursive Q. It looks like a two, deceptively enough.
Yeah, I think that was one of, I remember being a little kid and learning about handwriting and remember, you know, kind of a lot of the letters very similar, have very close cousins in the cursive family. And then Q shows up as well as a couple others like lowercase X's. I remember being slightly weird, or even lowercase Q is kind of a strange character, isn't it?
Yeah, you had to write that all the time, presumably it being in your name and signature.
It's true. And I also, you know, like any good Q having last person name, I went and sought out opportunities to use Q in cool ways because that could be my logo or my brand or my next video game character, right?
If you ever need to become a Batman villain, then you've got a, you know, you're
the cure.
The cure? Oh,
man.
The cure. You're the band The Cure.
I'm the band The Cure. Oh, I hated it the second I said it, so.
You're the cure to what's ailing Gotham.
That's right. You hear that, Bats? I always love, in the Batman games, the sort of ambient thug dialogue that you get in those things, where whenever Batman shows up, and especially in the Arkham games, you just hear a cacophony of, "It's the Bat!" And stuff like that.
You'd also pick up like actual conversations that they were having. And it's one of those instances where it's like very clear that somebody was just writing that dialogue as their entire job. And they would have been bored if they didn't like write something substantial. But at the same time, it kind of would have like helped out the world atmosphere a little bit if it was a little bit less substantial. Instead, everyone is having like philosophical conversations, or they're having like slightly piss-takey conversations about like, isn't it weird that we're being hunted down by a guy dressed as a giant bat?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. It's like, well, you know what? I even have a hard time talking to people that I've worked with in the past, much less a couple of random criminals standing on the street corner.
Yeah, like getting together and going, I hear he's got giant ears inside that mask. You know, like there's no need to indulge in this. You can just be generic villain A and I can beat the crap out of you.
All right, well, let's get into our own video games. Instead of criticizing others, let's put our money where our mouth is and see if we can do it any better.
Okay.
I believe that you are up first today. Cure us with your wisdom.
The cure is on its way for what ails you. And in this case, it is a video game pitch that is actually expanding upon and borrowing a last thought of the week from a few weeks ago that I had that I think we wanted to talk more about. It is a video game where you own and operate a candy factory. And now, aside from all the usual kind of tycoon-style management stuff, you're also in charge of having regular tours scheduled for this factory for all sorts of awful children who you plan on tricking and getting to eat your very mysterious candies and disposing
murdering.
Of them, yes,
yeah.
in very creative ways. So, people come in. You are maybe designing candies with symptoms and that would entice these different types of children. And you're trying to convince them to get it and eat it. And maybe every time you dispose of a kid, you get a wonderful musical number, too. So that is the pitch this week.
All right. And we'll start the clock. So this could really work as like a cross between the theme park tycoon or the zoo tycoon type games and like a spore type game. Like I want the creation of the candy to feel like it's evolving, like it's some sort of natural process, because I love that scene in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, specifically that version in which Willy Wonka issues all these children into this beautiful forest of candy flavored items. And I would like to think that maybe they just grew that way, that he's not doing that to, you know, get his own jollies. He's picking the lollipops off the trees. And so creating this edifice of natural landscapes, natural beauty, and seeing what kinds of candies naturally evolve there could be really interesting.
Yeah, I love that, that instead of necessarily, you know, sitting there and pouring molds and all this stuff, that it's a more organic candy forest and you're using different fertilizers and attracting different kinds of animals that will, like, push the crop evolution in one direction or another.
Or maybe you have a choice, like in Civilization, you can choose to specialize in, like, natural candies versus... like the heavy industrial candies. Yeah,
the healthy candies.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, there's always in these RTS type games, there's always like one faction that's very close to the land, like the Protoss or the Zerg. And there's another faction that's like super weaponized and mechanical and efficient, like the, ooh, boy, what are the name of the space marines in StarCraft?
Terran.
Yeah, that's it.
So I thought it would be kind of cool. I recently watched my girlfriend play Zoo Tycoon, and the modern incarnation on it on Xbox One. And there is a I didn't realize this about modern tycoon games, but you can kind of zoom all the way in, and I think this is popular in a lot of this genre. Zoom all the way in and kind of wander around the park yourself. So I love the idea of being able to kind of have these two modes, one of park management, but then the second of tour guide, where you can kind of suggest that these children try a candy or sing them a strange little song on a part of the tour. Just the ability to live both, like, because Willy Wonka, I guess at the end of the day, would have to be this zoomed out weird manager of a candy factory, and at the same time, like, he's giving the tour. It's very unusual.
Yeah. I would like if all of the songs in this game incorporated like the randomized verbiage that goes into the different types of candy that can be created.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like in Shadow of Mordor, Shadow of War, how these there's these chants in the background of each of the orc generals that you run into based on their randomized names. And you realize like they must have had to like record each possible name as a chant or found some clever way of doing it. But I could imagine that you can create some pretty clever roundabout ways of incorporating every possible combination of candy title into some sort of a lesson song.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe you could even take a more, you know, cruel Sweeney Todd-esque route and just say that this factory is really an elaborate guise for murder, and just do the full Tim Burton dark version of this thing. But yeah, I was thinking in my head that it would be interesting to have, like, say you have, maybe it's turn-based or something like that, and you know in X amount of turns or in X time period, a group of kids are going to show up, and you start learning about the kids as the sort of golden tickets go out, and you find out, oh, this guy is, he's big into computers and video games, you know, just all the stereotypes from the, from the Willy Wonka. And the Willy Wonka, I'm 70 years old. And then you can kind of customize what you're going to create each time. So maybe it's less like one persistent factory sim, and instead it's kind of like learning about what kids you're going to encounter going on, and then saying, okay, I'm going to develop a special type of chocolate bar for this kid, and a special type of, like, you know, everlasting gobstopper for this kid, and see if you're able to lure them into sections of the factory. And maybe the trick is to get them alone or only with their parent.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty grim.
Yeah, I'm realizing I just said an elaborate version of Get in My Van. But yeah. It would be with a very hopefully whimsical theme wrapped around it.
Yeah, and whimsy makes that all okay. One of the parts of the movie that I really like is the boat ride.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, you know, that serves very little functional purpose other than presumably just stirring up the liquid chocolate. But I like the ability to also balance the presentation and to have parts of the of the factory that are just for show rather than for function.
Uh-huh.
Maybe if you were able to, I guess, cross-utilize those in some way, but maybe disguise some of the machines and some of the behind-the-scenes stuff with some type of a ride or attraction that could be visually pleasing as well.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we make it so that you have access to a bunch of different sort of strange, unorthodox devices, gadgets, vehicles, whatever, even like a tractor, you know, all this kind of non-candy-based technology. And you say, okay, well, you can create chocolate bars, but you're going to need a source of constantly melted chocolate. And now it's kind of up to you to kind of say, all right, well, if I go to the like chocolate cave or the chocolate mountain and I use a bulldozer to kind of like plow it and get it into piles, and then I can have, you know, a room full of hair dryers melted down. It's just like a very strange Rube Goldberg way of harvesting and refining all the resources, almost like a factorio or something like that.
You know, it could be really fun is actually, and I'm sure this is a part of the pitch originally, but building a chocolate factory to the scale of Willy Wonka's from like very humble beginnings, you know, where you just have enough money to invest in like one machine that spits out chocolate bars. And then you do your best to build up a shipping network and to widen your distribution net and to refine your formula and eventually develop these chocolate plants and to build your factory and see it evolve with you.
Yeah, that's true. They never really touch on the whole side of the equation of Willy Wonka also must have to be selling a bunch of chocolate, right? To have all these strange R&D projects.
His chocolate all across the world being distributed in the golden ticket contest.
Yeah, that's true. So, oh, okay. So this is what we do, right? You maybe work up to certain milestones and you earn the ability to issue a golden ticket. And so now you get into the business. Maybe it's not until like, you know, partway through the game where you start getting the ability to earn these golden tickets and use them to lure in. Well, you know, we'll make the kids cartoonishly evil, right? Just like the worst of the worst. They're all garbage pail kids, you know, like you're not going to feel bad about, you know, turning them into blueberries and such.
What kinds of, you know, I think it would be fun to come up with a whole bunch of awful things that could happen to these kids, but it would be more fun to just kind of open a procedural engine where children can be harmed in creative ways. But I don't know if that's really sustainable. Like, I wouldn't want to sacrifice really elaborate child endangerment for
sure
the sake of open-endedness. You know, if there was enough created, authored content in there, then that could be quite satisfying.
So why don't we do, I think we could narratively frame it around these kids come in maybe at a part, you know, assuming that your lure works successfully, they transform, right? They transform into a blueberry or like a, you know, a giant rabbit that lays eggs and all this kind of crazy candy-based stuff. And on the way, you see the little avatar and their parents kind of leaving the factory. You get the almost Sims-ish poof, you know, they're back to them normal selves. And really, it's about teaching kids important lessons, right? And then now you tie it back into that kind of less weird, strange Willy Wonka angle.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that one girl did get thrown into a furnace, right?
I think so. And Mike TV, I think he just stays like totally shrunk.
if easier I'm not mistaken, feed, though, so you know.
Certainly, you give him one bar of chocolate, and he's good.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we're out of time on that one. Q, what are you calling this wonderful chocolate factory?
Well, I had a lot of time to think about the name because, again, we mentioned it a couple episodes back. But I'm going with, and you can thank the podcast title later for this, Dr. Sweet Street's Funtastic Factory.
So he has his doctorate then.
He does. Man or woman.
Yeah, or she.
You
know,
you could be
didn't
anything
mean to
you
assume
like
that the doctor was a man. That's the oldest riddle in the book sneaking up on me again.
Please, Dr. Sweet Street is my father.
That's right. I can't give this boy sweets. He's my son.
Perfect.
Anyways, I do like the name. I'm not going to repeat it because I'm not sure I remember all of it, but it's a good one. Anyways, my idea today is I really like the Street Pass games on the 3DS. And it makes me kind of sad that now that nobody really uses 3DSs anymore, you're not going to really get to play them anymore unless you buy like 10 3DSs and just Street Pass amongst themselves every day. But that's kind of a sad and lonely thing to do. So I want to kind of capture one of my favorite 3DS Street Pass games and turn it into like a full-on grand MMO, essentially. And what it is, I really like the one about stock trading. It gives you like a 30-second window of basically a line graph going up and down. It's about as exciting as it sounds. It's this particular stock is worth so much money, and then you're playing the part of a day trader. You try to buy when the cost is low and sell when the cost is high, and then you've got as many Mii's as you've street passed with, up to 10 in the last round of street passes, that are giving you advice.
Oh,
and so
no.
If you have enough of them, then you can pretty much get an accurate picture of when to buy and when to sell. And basically just keep on racking in the money. But what I want to do right now is, what if we have essentially like an open marketplace, free stock trading using fun game money, whatever, not real money because that gets into gambling. But it's a MMO open to everybody. And or you can host private rooms, I suppose. You can LAN party this.
With
but
real
basically,
money.
It's kind of like a idle game, like a cookie clicker or something. Except you wouldn't be generating money; you would just be day trading, and you can hop in at any time of the day and hop out. And the market would be entirely led by the community's decisions on what to buy and what to sell. So maybe there's a big name streamer who's online and buying everything in Cookie Corp, and so that stock shoots way up because all of his audience members are buying as well. And it's definitely not a stable market, but maybe it would give people some time to like learn of what the stock market's about. And I don't know, let's put it out there and see where we take it. I don't have it all figured out yet, but competitive stock trading MMO.
Well, I love the idea of this being a Nintendo thing and having Mii's giving the tips or the advice. If this is on my phone, a la a Miitomo, I can just imagine getting a push notification saying, "Hey, Sandy's got an insider tip for you." Although maybe insider tips is not what you're trying to teach in the stock market, but Sandy's got a tip. She heard some breaking news. And then what if you throw on top of it, you do the Splatoon style news broadcasts every once in a while when you open the app. So they're like, "Such and such company had a very good week," you know, that kind of thing. And now you're kind of learning the behavior of the company through news announcements. And maybe, I don't know, you could even get into like fake quarterly earnings and that kind of thing.
That's the thing, is that it would be probably more educational to do, like, you know, the company's having a really good week this week, and have that dictate what the market is doing, because that's the way that the real market works. But it would also be kind of interesting to just have, for it to just be based on the decisions of everyone else who's trading. And so I don't know if maybe just calling out a name would be enough for people to get interested and start investing. But I do want to leave the actual numbers completely in the hands of the community, which I guess is the way that it works in real life. So maybe that would work just fine.
That makes sense. I do like the idea of taking in the fictional company angle or the fictional stocks angle, almost like, again, pulling from Splatoon, the ketchup versus mayo, the like Splatfest type of stuff. Like, Nintendo could be free to say, "Hey, this week, two companies are going public, Frankenstein and Dracula, Incorporated." The community is like potentially pre-ordering stocks at like a certain price and, you know, doing all those things that make this stock market this literal, in a way, kind of terrifying risk reward of like, "Oh, listen, I hear Dracula's going to be announcing something this week. I've got a good feeling about Dracula. Buy Dracula." And of course, I guess buying would just be like, to your point, if it's an idle game, you just type in a, you know, a quantity and press do it.
But, you know, you have your limit of money. And of course, everyone who signs up would be granted money. And so this wouldn't be a stable economy. But proportionally, I guess, well, yeah, gosh, that gets messy, doesn't it? So it very quickly turn into the rich getting very rich and the poor getting very poor.
Well, maybe there's a way to, so in the nature of a truly idle game, because so many of these games are about you not having to do much, mm-hmm. maybe anybody can be either a investor or a broker, right? So mm-hmm. I just say, hey, Haymond, here's my money. I'm going to give it to you. You go make me money. And now you're the one investing or whatever, or I have to tell you I want to buy, you know, I've heard good things about, we all get maybe different news alerts or something. And I say, well, I just heard about this thing going on with ketchup, and I want you to put all my money in ketchup and make you kind of take the risk for me.
So if there are brokers and just, I guess, money men, what is the game for them? Like, if the entire game is really like the fun of the trade, what is the moment to moment that keeps the money suppliers coming back?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let's see. I mean, I guess you could do some sort of badging or earning system where we're able to earn like our own, like you're earning badges for us, but we're maybe able to give you accolades or something like that.
I guess if we relate this back to a idle game, then that actually kind of makes sense that, you know, there you want to keep making money while you're away from the computer. So you could invest in a, or put your money into a particular firm. Maybe there's like 10 of them. And then every person who is actively playing signs up to one of these 10 firms, and that's where they get the money to play with.
That makes total sense. And now, like, each firm has, you know, groups that you're going to really have to figure out a way to make it so that it's not fully predictable what's going to make and what's going to break. But you'll have firms now that have their portfolio literally based on their brokers, right?
Yeah. I mean, if anyone could just join any firm, I mean, maybe there are like private firms as well. Oh, and then we get into the real Wall Street elite. This is a good simulation of how this stuff actually happens.
Yeah, well, and you could do it with, you know, funny money, or I always call these things in any one of these types of games, crazy bucks, because it's so silly that they might as well be. But, okay, so now you could even do the detail of having each one of these firms maybe have access to one or two exclusive funds, right? Or some special hybrid fund or something that only that firm is allowed to invest in. And so that attracts people to invest in a particular firm of, like, I think a fun way to do it. Are you familiar with, I think it's called like fantasy cinema or something like that? It is an app that movie theaters have been trying to push.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Where they like want you to like guess something's opening weekend, or you place bets on what's going to have the biggest opening weekend. Mm-hmm. Surprise, it's the Avengers Infinity War. And and if you get enough right, you get enough picks right, I don't know, I think you get a coupon or something silly like that. But what if you did it, if it is a Nintendo game, based off of like Nintendo releases, like even third party indies and stuff? You just say, okay, I think this is gonna do really well in the eShop, put all my money into this game, and that becomes almost what like Nintendo does or likes to do with Motomo anyway, which is kind of gather user insight simultaneously while turning it into a game.
That could actually, like, separately, this could be a really smart addition to a marketplace, is to let people bet on what they think will be most popular every week and then reward them with, like, I don't know, 50 cents eShop credit if they get them right or something like that. I don't know. some very, very small amount, but like enough to where people are given like an actual reward, mostly just playing for the joy of getting it right. But
yeah, or even just like coins, right? Nintendo has all those, you know, incentive-based programs. Yeah, they can give you some silver coins or something like that. You can get a wallpaper if you want, you know, nothing crazy.
Well, you actually get stuff for your gold coins now, which is pretty rad.
Yeah.
You know, that would actually kind of get people watching the marketplace a little bit more closely and getting invested. And if they pick Celeste as their big game for the week, then they kind of want it to do well. They got that emotional attachment to it. So this is a really good customer insight manipulation tool.
Yeah, you could even do, and I think Destiny does something like this, where you, if you pick the correct faction, you get the gun or the item that they're giving out for free. So maybe give someone a, you know, a 10% discount if they pick the winner. But also that in a strange way, right? Like if somebody is familiar with the developer, or if they're familiar with the, perhaps the game has come out on other platforms already. Mm-hmm. Now they're checking the eShop every week. They're seeing what's coming out. They're placing their votes or buying the quote stock. And in doing so, they are A, checking the eShop every week, like you said, yeah, which is awesome. And then B, they're feeling like they, you know, if they're an expert and they're able to pick the winners, they're being rewarded for just their knowledge of video games.
Yeah. And knowledge of Nintendo platform specific games.
Yeah. I think we've pushed it in this direction because we would be good at this now.
That's right. Give me a game that I can win.
Please. Finally.
Okay. Well, let's circle back to stock trading. Let's put some sort of a ribbon on this before we move on. I want to come up with one more interesting twist. Let's see, where else can we take this?
I mean, I would love to figure out a way to introduce the concept of the economic boom and bust, like the bubble in some way.
Since there is, since we already did kind of talk about the problem of inflation, you know, maybe there are consequences for that down the line that all take place within this simulation. Maybe, I guess, even being away from the computer for a month or two, you come back and the amount of money that you had amassed is pretty much worthless now just due to the economy being that much stronger. Or maybe like we said before, if everything is cycled through traders and firms and everything, then maybe it stays somewhat balanced. I'm not sure.
Maybe, yeah. Or
there's lots to figure out here.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that. Maybe Nintendo or whoever's running the game could create like artificial rules and subsidies week in and week out. Hmm. So maybe they have a separate website or something else that you could check where they're like, hey, any game or anything with the stock that starts with the letter A would be 5% less today. And only if you're paying attention to those kind of wins and shifts do you get rewarded for this sort of meta game behavior.
And of course, being Nintendo, the information that you need is off device.
Of course. You need a second phone to chat with your friends.
That's all the time we have on that one. Let's come up with a name here. This one's going to be very easy to pun, so I want to make sure to get a good one. You see, we have the words firm and stock in there, but I'm not sure I want to pursue that line of thought.
I also want to, maybe there's something fun around Wall Street. This seems so strange that maybe it could be a Wario Street. Like, doesn't Wario just want to become rich or something?
Yeah, the Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, no. Oh, Wolf of Wall Street is very good. Okay, that's a contender for sure.
Okay. It does kind of sadden me, but
is it because of Wario or because
it's a very bad pun?
It is.
We like to, we have an economy of very good puns a lot of the time.
Even if we did Wall Street Money Never Sleeps, it's not quite.
You could do Stock Blockers.
Yeah, Stock Blockers is also very good.
You know what? That's good enough. I'm going to call it there.
Stock Blockers. : Wolf of Wall Street.
That's so bad. So bad.
That's right. And if you want to fix our terrible names, go to playwrightcast.com and go ahead and leave us a comment or an email, and we'll read it. We promise.
We will read it and weep. Anyways, this next pitch comes from the community. This was an email sent to our website, actually. This was submitted to playwrightcast.com/pitch, where anyone can write in their own idea for a video game and have it workshopped on the show. This comes from a name that I don't recognize, so might be a fun one. This comes from Jeff Fool. Jeff Fool says, Sims Stranded RimWorld meets Lost, a simple management game where you set jobs for a group of survivors stranded on a deserted island. Build beds and homes or tents until you can build a boat to escape. Focus on farming or lead a hunter-gatherer band of survivors. A few threats could be natural elements like animals and storms, or maybe we're looking at modern-day pirates. I wouldn't want to get too wacky, but a user tool to build in-game items constructed solely from wood, vines, and coconuts might be tough to say no to. All right, and we'll start the clock.
Jafool, I love this, and I'll tell you why. I feel at first like you read the description, and I thought to myself, okay, this just sounds like every survival game. But then when I thought about the humor and the feel of one of these, essentially playing Castaway as a sim, mm-hmm. and not a sim in the, you know, for the audience, not the traditional sim, but as the Sims sim, that could be very funny.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about there's a lot of survival games, especially from about like 3 years ago when everyone on Steam released a survival zombie game. But they're all first person or third person action games or gathering games. And I don't recall ever seeing one that is like an RTS or like a civilization builder. You know, you're not really like expanding, but just that level of management of resources. And I mean, I guess it's the same root gameplay, just in a different perspective. So it's interesting to think through. But yeah, this idea of adding humor to it, I think, could go a long way, because a lot of those games started getting real grim dark really quickly.
Yeah, and I mean, you have games out now, even like Frostpunk, I believe it's called, where somebody is managing like a town that is trying to survive an Earth ice age and everything's on the brink of collapse, or like, and that's from the developers of This War of Mine, which is also another one of these dark, sort of depressing, like affecting games. And the idea of, you know, you see a lot of these movies where someone's stranded on an island or something, and there's always kind of, even in like Lord of the Flies, there's the establishment of things falling apart in the crash and the arrival, and then there is things picking up, crescendoing, and then eventually them getting off. But what you don't see, and I think is an interesting space to explore, is the minutiae of day-to-day survival. And what I mean by that is, like, by the end of, you know, Castaway, Tom Hanks is able to spear a fish perfectly. You know, when he got on that island, he couldn't do that. What was that path like? You know, what was him failing over and over again day after day? What was him learning to tie ropes and create shelter for himself, or fire even?
Maybe it would be kind of fun if there was these kind of levels of procedurally generated mysteries on each of these islands.
Yeah, that's really cool. Or even maybe you do end up running into one or two people that are indigenous to the island. I don't know. I don't know why there'd only be two people on this island, but or you crash. Shipwreck. Yeah. Or sim style, you just make a family, right? You like crash as a group of people rather than an individual. And then you set everyone off to learn their area of expertise. Suddenly everybody's going to have to become an expert in something, whether it's hunting and gathering or, you know, creating things and that sort of stuff. I'm trying to think if those things manifest either as a mini game, if that's appropriate, or maybe, you know, what do you think? Could it be handled like The Sims, where it's just like someone reading a book and a little bar is filling up?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how many people you want to manage and what pace of the game you want to encourage, you know, because if you're spending all of your time playing fishing games, then you're not really spending any of that time progressing inwards in the island, or making a slow progression up a mountain somewhere, maybe, or exploring this space. You know, this idea of being grounded with a home base and then slowly over the course of many, many days, just kind of scouting out the area and discovering things around you, the resources, the mysteries, would be neat as well.
I also almost want to introduce the concept of managing will, or maybe depression is even a better word, where, you know, you go and try and start a fire. Say you're all alone. You go and try and hunt a fish, and it's a one-shot mini game. And if you get it wrong, you're not eaten. You know, sorry, you missed breakfast. Like, you'll have an opportunity to try again at lunch or whatever, and then you can, you know, settle for, you know, lettuce again or try and hunt. But all the while, you know that if you string together too many losses of critical resources in a row, maybe that's what ends this sort of procedurally generated run. And then it's a new person crashing onto the island. You discover the previous person's bones and a note or something.
And maybe the island would rearrange itself, but it is still like canonically the same space. Like the beachfront is the same, but everything that you had explored before in previous runs is entirely changed.
Yeah. Or you can kind of have somebody that shows up to the island. Maybe there's, if you create something or make some level of progress, there's always the previous camp is left behind. And so you're able to continuously progress forward. But it, like, at the end, it's a matter of like how many people the island took. I'm going dark a little bit this week, but it's an interesting concept.
On a deserted island, like, that's a pretty dark subject already.
Yeah, it's going to be grim. And I think you want to have that feeling of, okay, the last person did leave some usable stuff behind. Maybe some of it gets washed away in part, but yeah, I think games like Sword of Ditto are starting to do stuff like this, where when a character dies, it becomes 100 years later, which is kind of an interesting approach.
I remember seeing that in, those games for Game Boy, or not Game Boy, for iPhone. Gosh, that's not even similar. That Epic used to make. Do you remember those? Really good looking, really simple sword combat games.
Oh, yes. Infinity Blade. That is exactly that it, I believe. Okay. Yeah. And then Infinity Blade 2, where you just kind of tap and swipe your way, right?
Yeah. But you would play, you would be the descendant of whoever you were playing as last, and it would span over many hundreds of years. And since then, and probably previous to then as well, a lot of games have done that, but it was always a real striking decision. It you can feel the scale of the adventure. It becomes kind of mythic almost.
Yeah. And if you take it from the idea of that strategy or that Sims perspective, you're making these choices that are very zoomed out, and potentially you are, like, the idea of a loss of a person is how you connect it back to that emotional core and make someone feel loss or feel their character's story of, like, well, you know, I missed fishing twice, and then the next time there were no fish because there was a storm coming in, and, you know, that storm wiped out a piece of my camp. I wasn't able to sleep where I was supposed to. I got mauled by a tiger and I'm gone. You know, like, and that's how Jerry, you know, here lies Jerry, a bunch of headstones, right? Little driftwood headstones that say, here lies Jerry, he got eaten by a shark, and that's the end.
I guess, how silly do we want to get with, like, the mysteries that you can uncover on this island? Because we could go full on Lost and have the smoke monsters and polar bears and everything that you can run across, or maybe we keep it a little bit more grounded and just have, like, a native tribe here and there, or some, I guess, ruins of ancient temples or something like that. Like, how out there do you want to get?
Man, I think you can get really out there. Now imagine, H, this game maybe told and displayed in the style of, like, a Stardew Valley, right?
Okay.
So you can go out pretty far on the island, but you're also managing, you know, your level of tiredness and your hunger and all these things. So if you get too far away from your camp, you overextend. But the island itself has a fog of war sort of aspect to it. Maybe your certain tools you're going to need to get to before you can clear out pieces of shrubbery and continue forth and learn all the secrets it has. It's almost like the feeling of a Subnautica, but there's an island, right? It's about what tools can you develop? How good can you become at doing the little things? Like, okay, I have hunger and tiredness basically under control. Now exploration becomes the third tier of that support.
There's also, especially if you're dying a lot, there's something kind of comical about planes they just keep on crashing on this one island, or ships that keep on wrecking on this one island and depositing one survivor or one group of survivors.
Yeah, and I like the idea of, you can frame the whole thing of it's an island in the Bermuda Triangle, right? Like a well-known place where every plane comes down, no matter what. I don't know why people keep flying over it. But potentially even, you know, the plane or the crash is a good excuse to have objects washed ashore or potential resources at the beginning of every run. It's like, okay, well, this person, you know, has something that I can fashion as a boat and something that I can use as like a knife. So I guess I don't have to worry about that. I've got a leg up in those areas, but no food washed up with me. So I'm going to have to get to work right away.
Anyways, that's all the time that we have there. Jeff Wool does come in with a suggested name, puts forward Sim Stranded. I would also suggest Bermuda Forts. Jeff Wool, as we said before, submitted that via the website, which you can do at playwrightcast.com/pitch. You can tweet us at playwrightcast, or you can email us playwrightcast@gmail.com. It all goes to the same place somewhat. You know, we'll find it. We'll read it on the show. It'll be discussed, dissected, and rebuilt into something new and viable.
It's true. And if you're a listener that hasn't written us before, if you haven't written us before, now is a great time because we're getting towards the end of this box and we're looking for new suggestions. And if you feel not ready, you don't feel like this is baked, trust us, every week, you know, H and I show up and sometimes I don't know where it's going to go. I hope it's going to go somewhere. And a lot of times it does. And I think that's the thing, that we're all taking chances and having fun together.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to thank Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World. It's off the album Blue Noise. It's very good and you should listen to it.
And to take us out of the show today, why don't you give us a small miniature pitch?
Sure. So the mini pitch this week is Into the Breach, but you're a team of adults chasing toddlers around public spaces and stopping them from causing various levels of destruction.
All right. That'll do it for us today. We will see you next week.
Bye.